Hello, and welcome to Kazigram Dialogue, a podcast dedicated to having honest conversations on the issues most important to life and to our culture. You can find us online at kazingram.com. That's kazingram.com. We hope you enjoy this episode. Be sure to like and subscribe.
Happy New Year, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Kazigram Dialogue. This is the first episode of 2021. Today we have Adam Cohen the Slady. Adam is the founder and CEO of S'more and formerly the managing director of Chappie. In this episode, we talk to Adam about S'more, the dating app that he founded, which is aimed at rejecting the superficiality of online dating in favor of forming long-term relationships that are healthy. We also discuss the future of online dating, including the integration of virtual reality and artificial intelligence. S'more is doing some very, very cool things. They've been interviewing celebrities through their Instagram. So without further ado, please welcome Adam to the Kazigram Dialogue. Recording. Adam, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you doing?
You know, it's the end of a really interesting year in the world and in the dating world also. So we had a great year this year. We're looking forward to a brighter 2021 in every way possible. So so we're excited.
Did you guys find, as lots of tech companies, when March hit, there was a huge spike? Was that the same for you guys with S'more?
Yeah, so it's interesting because S'more actually launched in beta in January. So this past January. Okay. In February, the show Love is Blind premiered on Netflix, which is very similar to our product. So we had thousands and thousands and thousands of new users. And then COVID happened and everyone was stuck at home and they realized that they're single. And, it's funny because you feel so connected until you're physically isolated and then you don't feel so connected. So yeah, just like many other large dating apps, we also saw a very quick spike in downloads and also daily activity went up.
I should have started with this question, but would you like to introduce yourself to our audience and tell us what you do, what S'more is?
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Adam Cohen, and I'm the founder of the world's first anti-superficial relationship app. It's called S'more, and S'more stands for something more, and something more is the number one phrase that people use when they give feedback on dating apps. So it's not a coincidence that we're called S'more. Also represents a layered cookie, getting to know all the layers of a person, with the equality sign on the top and bottom of the cookie, and held together, the glue of a relationship is communication, which is our marshmallow. So yes, everything's very intentional about what we do. I'm actually a 10-year veteran of the dating and relationship space. I built my first dating website in 2008 as a grad student at Harvard, and I've been in the industry ever since. My most recent role was leading a company called Chappie. Chappie was part of Bumble. So it was Bumble's gay dating app. So worked really closely with Whitney Wolf and executives at Bumble to build up that brand. And then I started S'more.
Did you, when you first created your app in 2008, what was the app called? Was it, did you test it out with friends?
Yeah. So in 2008, it was interesting. So I was 22, I was a grad student, and I had a real difficulty meeting students outside of my field of study. So I was so interested in meeting, lawyers and doctors and engineers. And I had so many family members that went to Harvard. And the one thing that they said about the school that they really loved was the network that they built. But I just found my network to be only with the students that I was studying with. And I felt like it was a bit of a wasted opportunity if I wasn't going to develop a network past or beyond just the field of study that I was in. So I petitioned the provost and I said, hey, how do we actually create network in the graduate community? You do it for undergrads, but shouldn't we also do it for graduate students? And so essentially I wrote a proposal, they gave me $25,000 and they said, go figure it out. And so in 2008, I created a website that allowed you to create a profile and match with students outside of your field of study. And then we hosted these speed dating or speed meeting events where you actually got to meet people based on your preferences. And if there was someone that you liked and they liked you, your email addresses would automatically be exchanged on the website. And Again, this was in 2008. So it was before the iPhones, before any dating apps in the world.
This is like, you are way ahead of the game.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm Canadian originally, living in the US for many years now, but I've always been interested in the human connection. I just loved always watching people have conversations and really getting to know more about a person. I'm a nerd that way. I can just talk to anyone for hours and hours and hours, and I'm truly deeply interested in the human connection. So I've always been interested in bringing people together.
Do you find, since obviously 2008, even though 2008 to 2000, I mean, we're in 2020 now, which is kind of crazy if you just think about, it's been 12 years. Lots have changed, right? We've got iPhone, I think we're like iPhone 11, 10, whatever it is.
12,
iPhone 12. Okay, we got iPhone 12. We got lots of dating apps happening. And in the beginning, you were talking about the TV show Love is Blind. And there was an article, I forget where the article was written. The gentleman writing it was talking about how he downloaded S'mores because a friend of his said, hey, you should watch Love is Blind. Binge watch Love is Blind. And then another friend was like, okay, now you should download S'mores. And then he went on S'mores and tried it all out. And the unique thing about S'mores is everything, all your features are hidden, or the person's features are somewhat hidden. And then you unlock it as you get to know the person. Was that how you initially envisioned it? Or was it, did it change as more users came on and they gave you feedback?
Yeah, so I guess that goes to the founding story. So I call myself an unexpected entrepreneur. I never, ever planned to launch my own dating app. I don't think the world needs another dating app. And I truthfully left Magic Labs, which was the owner of Bumble, as the managing director of Chappie. And I found myself on a beach in Mexico. And I had worked for The Meet Group. I had done a consulting group for Raya and for Zeusk and for a lot of other companies in the industry. And I met a woman, and she was an African-American woman. She was millennial. She was curvy. And she told me that I ruined her life. And that's literally how I started this company. When I say I'm an unexpected entrepreneur, it wasn't like I was setting out to solve something big. I'm very good at operating these businesses. I know how to grow them. I know how to make a lot of money. I didn't really want to build something on my own. It was never a plan for me. And so I met a woman, and she said, look, women are very smart. We've been on these apps for 6, 7, 8 years, and it's a game. Women know exactly how to airbrush a photo, what to write in the first message, and what's right on their bio in order to get a man to respond. She said, men are very simple. You do these three things, men will respond to you. And by the way, men have also been dating online for 5, 6, or 7 years. And so it's a game for them too. They know exactly what they need to do to a woman or say to a woman to get the woman to respond. So we're all playing this game, and we're putting a version of ourselves out there that isn't real. Yet we're expecting to be in relationships at the end of this sort of, like, you know, fake experience. And that just doesn't work, which is why you see there are so few relationships that start online as compared to the number of people who are using dating apps. Because for many people, it's a popularity contest, it's a beauty contest, and it's really a lot of catfishers and bad actors. It's started out to really help people connect, and it's become more of a game. And so she said, look, I'm a Black woman. I'm a woman of color. It's already hard for me to find love. Now you throw me into this dating world where if you are not a white person, it's hard to get exposure in these environments. And I've been catfished. I've been breadcrumbed. It's awful. I just want a man. Why is it so hard to find a man? And so I went up to my room, and honestly, in 24 hours, I had built S'more. I had designed the entire product spec of S'more. And I said, the biggest problem with these dating apps, in my view, and some of them do a good job. I mean, I'm not knocking the industry. I think they do a lot to bring people together. Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest shortcomings is there's too much of an emphasis and a focus on a headshot. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like the hot or not. Is it worth my time or not? And while physically, you know, physical attractiveness is important, it shouldn't be the way you screen someone in or out of your life. And so I wanted to make it much more intentional. So S'more was always designed to be an environment where you have to suspend judgment for a few minutes and get to know the person before you see them. And as you interact with them, more of them will be revealed. So basically, the more time you spend with them, the clearer they become philosophically and actually literally in the app.
Do you find that the dating apps prior to S'more, and of course, there are tons of dating apps, The one I'm thinking of particularly is Tinder. And, you know, I have tons of friends who've used Tinder or continue to use Tinder. And I've always wondered if from a psychological perspective, has the prominence of Tinder made us or the users of Tinder more shallow? And, you know, maybe there's been research on this and I don't know, but I want to get your thoughts on that. Do you think that that whole idea of swiping right, swiping left, and then there's nothing more to it, and you know, Tinder is known as the hookup app. Do you think there has been a drastic negative impact on people using it?
So I think, you know, Tinder and other apps, they did a very good job at dating 1.0, bringing it into an app. Essentially, they're connecting millions of people instantly. So that's good. In terms of the gay community, you know, there's a lot of negativity about Grindr, and they definitely can do a million things better. But the initial version of Grindr, if you think about when they started, you know,
Grindr is
for gay men.
For gay men, okay, yeah.
You think about when they started their app, which is even before Tinder. It's 2 years before Tinder. They created their app when gay marriage wasn't legal, when everyone was really in the closet. There's still a lot of people, but it was very much not socially accepted, and they were helping a community that couldn't find each other connect. So what they did was very positive. Unfortunately, it hasn't really evolved that much since 10 years ago, and the community has. It feels like they're still kind of keeping people under the radar in a way. But yeah, I think that, you know, Tinder solved a lot of problems. You know, you're able to see as many people as possible. It basically was telling you that there's a million fish in the sea. Don't worry if this doesn't work out. There's a zillion other people to look at. But it had us focus on the wrong thing, which is just a headshot. And it came at about a time where we were focused on social media and Twitter, Snapchat and Instagram, where everyone wanted a million likes, and airbrushing, and Facetune came out as an app. And so it was sort of the Kardashian era. Everyone wanted to be perfect, but that perfection wasn't real. And so it led us down a path where we wouldn't be happy in the long run because it wasn't really who we were. But that's how the industry kind of set itself up for the young generation. And I think what it really has caused is young people to treat relationships as if they were disposable, not really treating people with a level of respect that they deserve. And as a result, we don't have a lot of relationships. And I think that now, because it's COVID, and now because we're literally home alone and don't have anyone, I think now is a big, you know, reckoning time where we're reflecting on how we've treated other people and why we're in the state that we are. And truthfully, you know, in many ways, it's really shitty to be alone. It doesn't feel good to not have a person to be with you, your number one, someone to motivate you, to inspire you. It actually is better being together, in my view. And I think a lot of people believe in that. It's just hard to find the right person. But if we've been treating others in a not great way, and they've been treating us in a not great way, we're setting ourselves up for failure. And I think that that's where S'more comes in, because we just take a very different approach. Our approach is you're using our product because you want to be in a relationship. Well, that already sets us apart from other apps. You're using S'more because you want to be in a relationship and you believe in treating people with a level of respect. Physically attractiveness or physical attractive, being physically attracted to a person is very important, but it is not the only part of a relationship. And I think that for anyone who's been catfished, anyone who has seen photos of someone from 10 years ago and then gone on a date, and I believe that most people listening to this have probably had a bad dating app experience. We're trying to improve it for everyone, right? So, and I can talk about some of our features later, but yes, we're an intentional-based relationship app, but we're also trying to improve upon the basics. So hopefully the whole industry adopts what we've created.
Do you think online dating is going to continue becoming a much bigger trend than it currently is? You know, right now, because of COVID and people can't go out, you know, restaurants are closed and other outdoor activities are closed. I mean, we're in winter mode, but do you think that though what COVID has brought forth will continue to go on for the next, 10, 20 years, and, you know, more and more people are going to start going, downloading, you know, S'mores, for example, or whatever dating app, Hinge maybe, and finding love online, because it's going to become virtual is going to become the next in-person thing.
Yeah. So I think, yes, I think that we have now unlocked a new normal of dating. I don't think we're going back to pre-COVID. I think that's actually a positive for relationships. It's a positive for dating. It's much safer to do it this way. I think what COVID has done has really slowed us down. While we might be swiping for days, we're not meeting people instantly, which means we're spending more time vetting a person. We're getting to know them a bit more. Even if it's for a casual encounter, we're getting to know them a bit more. And hopefully we're adding additional security to the app experience and to our vetting process so that we don't have really negative experiences. I think it also means that the first date is a lot less awkward because you're spending more time getting to know that person. So when you do go on a first date, you know more about them and it's not a waste of money and time on both people's parts. I think also what COVID has done was put a new emphasis on dating criteria that straight people tended to have not really considered, which is health and wellness. So in the gay community, it was very common on apps like Grindr or Her or Scruff or what have you for the gay community to articulate their STD status or HIV status or whatever it is, because it's more prevalent in that community than other communities. But in the straight world, no one's on a dating app. Very few people are talking about that. However, COVID is health and wellness in a different way, right? People on our app, and our app is a straight dating app. It's straight, but it's for everyone. It could be straight, gay, questioning, anywhere on the spectrum. And on our app, over 50% of our users ask what your COVID status is before they meet in person.
50%. Oh, interesting. That's so huge.
And that's a health and wellness criteria, which was never a consideration before. People want to know, have you had it? Do you have it? Do you have the antibodies? When did you have it? When were you last tested? So we're starting to ask more personal questions about health and wellness in the dating world, which I think is very positive. And it's allowing us to be much more transparent about that experience. And I think that will continue forward past 2021. And by the way, you alluded to this earlier, yes, the industry is growing like crazy. In the last year, so since COVID started, the industry in the US has grown over 18% in 1 year. That's massive growth. It's not mature. And if you think about it, 100% of the way people met in 2020 was online. 100%. Yeah. No gyms, no bars, no lounges, no clubs, literally only on apps.
That's crazy. That's absolutely nuts. 18%. And that's and so you think that that trend is just going to continue going upwards?
Yeah, for a few reasons. One, I think that people who had used dating apps prior are using more of them because there's just no other way to meet people. And by the way, only 50% of American singles use dating apps. Okay. So that means 50% of American singles who don't use dating apps. So the growth just in the US is gigantic, which is why you're seeing a lot of dating apps go public, raise money. In the past, this is an industry where investors were hard pressed to invest because they didn't see growth, they didn't see opportunity. Now they actually see these becoming sort of more like social networks, more like communities, and they become cash cows because people are more willing to spend money on dating apps than ever before. And it is a new form of very inexpensive entertainment.
So for you guys at S'mores, this was a busy year.
Yes, very busy.
And how did you, this is kind of going back a bit more into, you know, I believe you raised your seed in November of 2019. Since then, and now we're in December 2020, what have, like, as a founder and as the CEO of S'more, what are some things that you know, because this year has been very, very busy for you. Like, what are some things that you've done in your day-to-day life that's kind of kept you on track, you know, not being burnt out, you know, pushing the product, you know, building the product. Like, what are some things you've put in place for yourself?
So it's definitely been a busy year. We did raise money before we launched our product. We raised over $1 million pre-product, so pre-seed. We're also going to be announcing.
That's also pretty that's rare, right? To raise pre-product. How was that? How was that? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah. So how was that? That was a challenge. I was running the company on my own. I just kind of wanted to see if I could do it now that I had this concept. And I really thought that there hadn't been much disruption in the space. And this was pre-COVID, right? So I just wanted to create something where people were really going to be spending time getting to know each other. I love the concept. I think the world was ready for a big iteration in the dating world. And yeah, I've been in the space for 10 years. I started to reach out to investors. And I think it took us 4 months and we raised $1 million. And it's not like I knew these people. I didn't know any investors. I didn't have a network at all. My network was operators. So I knew all the executives at Tinder, at Bumble, at all the dating group at different companies, but I didn't really know the investment community. And yeah, we told our story, we raised our money, and we will announce in January of 2021 that we've raised we completed our seed round of funding, several million dollar round.
Congrats. Yeah. That's awesome.
And our product, as of January 4th, will be completely redesigned. And so we have a new version of the app based on a year of feedback from users. We now have 150,000 people that use our product. And again, we're a tiny little startup. So to grow that quickly in such a short period of time without millions of dollars is impressive. And what I put in place, so you know, I don't burn myself out, is I don't really know. You know, it was a year where you really, you know, everyone at our company works 7 days a week. It's a startup. We don't have a lot of resources. You don't do this because the pay is amazing. You do this because you A, believe in what you're doing, and B, hopefully you're building something and you benefit in the long run. And we have an amazing team of engineers, operations, product, marketing, et cetera, that has really dedicated an entire year of their life to this company. And hopefully they dedicate more years than just this year. But I don't think that there was any process in place. We just treated each other like with a lot of respect. You know, when someone was sick, I tried to not call them, but we still probably had calls even when they were sick, because with a company this small, if one person is not working, that function can't be done in that day. So we need to really make sure that we're all always in communication. And yeah, our team is just so dedicated to our product, really believes in a better future for online dating. And yeah, we've just been so lucky to have the team that we do. And I truly think it's an all-star team. And it's made up of executives from other industries that have come aboard into Swarm.
Is this the first company you founded? Have you founded, besides the dating app that you started back when you were in Harvard, start a company after that?
No, this is the first from zero entrepreneur experience. At Chappie, Chappie was, I ran the business. So I hired, I fired, I managed a team within Magic Labs, but Magic Labs itself was a very large company. So you kind of feel like a bit like an entrepreneur. I mean, I'm the decision maker of that business, but it was still part of a gigantic corporation. So this is really, we are bootstrapping this. I mean, we are not getting paid a lot. We're in a little WeWork office. We started a celebrity dating show with zero budget. I mean, we did everything with no resources. And to look back to see what we've accomplished in a year, I mean, we've had over 85 articles come out about S'more in a year. 85 articles for a little nothing startup is crazy.
Was that, what would you say that was because of? Was it like your marketing team? I'm assuming everybody wears tons of hats there, but is it the way you guys marketed, or is it just the product and the users, word of mouth?
Yeah, I don't think that there's one reason why. I have to say, and I have to give credit to, you know, my experience at Magic Labs working with Whitney Wolf, who founded Bumble. She really took a very laser focused approach to brand building as the main point of differentiation. And I, as someone who is a marketer myself, very much believe in that. I don't think that in 2021 or 2020, you can create a consumer product service that doesn't have a strong point of differentiation. So we made sure to come at this with a very different POV. We wanted to really, we were the app that stood for genuine relationships, but every app says that. So how do you really stand out? So we said, well, we don't believe in judging a person based on a headshot. We are the anti-superficial relationship app, anti-superficial. So if you think about that concept as a positioning, there's no negative connotation with being anti-superficial. Even if you are superficial, you would still recommend a product that's anti-superficial because it's 100% positive. So when you create a business that has a 100% positive referral rate, people tend to recommend your product, even if they're not users of your product. Mm. And that's very similar to a company like Bumble, where female empowerment is only positive. So even if you don't use that product, that's still something that you would recommend to a friend. So understanding sort of the psychology behind marketing, we really created a unique product that also had a very unique positioning in the market that people actually really cared about. And also that was enduring, right? Because being anti-superficial doesn't go out of style. Judging a person on who they are, not the color of their skin, will never go out of style. And that's why we created that sort of mantra for the company from day one.
Is there a conflict, because you used to be at Bumble and now you're starting S'mores, which would be broadly one of your competitors? Is there no issue for you or for the company?
It's a different product. We're really targeting more serious daters. We're targeting people who are really relationship centric, totally different product.
So this is a question that I wanted to ask you. So in terms of if the dating world continues to go on online and more, you know, dating's happening there, and you know, VR is also a new, what do they call it? It's the, I forget what the term that's used, but it was this very hyped up product that, you know, hasn't fully delivered yet, but you know, maybe it is coming along. Do you think that, you know, something like S'mores, for example, or even other products, that dating, once, if it continues on this trajectory of being online, would go into VR, you know, and then people will start, you know, like meeting each other through VR? And Spatial is a company that I believe maps your face onto the VR character. Do you think that's a possibility, or do you even see that?
Yeah, I love that. Personally, yes, I'm a very big believer, because I think that ultimately people want to meet in the real world, but this concept of virtual dating will just get more and more interesting, more and more rich. And so I think that this video dating is fine, but it's like 1.0. No one really likes to video date, but it's a good way of being intimate when you can't be physical with someone. But I think that VR takes it to the next level. Augmented reality is fun too. You can sort of add things to the video, which some dating apps have, and we'll be implementing some augmented reality features as well. But making it virtual reality really takes to the next level, and I think is the next iteration of the industry in general. But it may take a few years to get there, only because VR headsets are still not mainstream. And I still think that unless they're, you know, under a couple $100 and there's real reasons to use them every day, it's not going to be mainstream and there won't be mass adoption. So there probably are dating apps that already have VR. I just don't think it's a mass product for another 2-ish, 3 years. But I'm bullish on the space. And as soon as people are ready to buy those headsets, we are totally ready to implement a VR functionality, because I think it's very cool. I think you have that physical intimacy without physically being there. I think it also will let people understand why compatibility is more important than geography. Our industry has for so long been focused on who's the closest guy or girl to me. Let me only see the top 10. Those people very likely are probably not going to be for you, which is another reason why you're single, because you're really narrowing the net of people that you are willing to consider. And sometimes dating someone, if you live in Manhattan, that lives in Brooklyn, or even lives in Queens, or even lives in Long Island, you actually may find the perfect person. But today you're not even really considering that as an option. So I think the VR allows you to consider more people and really get to know the right person rather than the closest person.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's something that I've found even with some of my friends who use dating apps. They tend to narrow it down between, I think, 25 miles or 25 kilometers, and never really expand the... Some of my other friends who I know have done long distance for many, many years, and then they got married, now have kids, right? So it's definitely a sector or an area that long distance is always seen as this thing. You're like, I don't want to try it. It's too hard. You know, it's very weird. You don't get to see them. You know, maybe you see them once a week.
I think part of people's hesitation is because most of these apps are made for casual encounters, right? If you're looking at a swiping app, that's the basic mechanic for hot, not hot, not hot, not hot, not. Typically, you want to do something right away. Typically, you want to see the person within 48 hours. So that's the reason for it. If you're using the product because you really want to date someone, because you really want to have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a longer term committed relationship, then you're hopefully using other products outside of just swiping, because that will allow you to hopefully learn a little bit more about the person. It also slows down the process. And I think those daters are going to be more willing to use VR, which allows you to do also, you know, connect with people that are more geographically distant.
It's like buying cheap wine that you're going to open immediately and then getting a long-term wine that you're going to open, you know, maybe 1 to 20 years from now.
And by the way, I'm not knocking casual encounters. It's fine. It's great. I think people should do it. But I think that there's a place for that. And there's also a place for more, you know, longer term relationships, more authentic connections. And honestly, the average person uses over 4 dating apps. So it's very likely that they have, you know, times in the day or times in a week that they really just want to do something casual. And then there's maybe times where they want to go on a proper date on the weekend and they're going to use a different app for that. And I think that we've seen that in the industry.
Do you think that there'll be a singularity moment with dating apps where everything gets, you know, joined into one massive?
Well, so I think you already see that today. I think so, you know, generation one of these dating apps was a lot of the swiping mechanics. And so the people that they attracted were millennials, right? So that was the first full generation to use a dating app. That generation in 2020, the oldest millennials are turning 40, but they're still using a swiping app. So think about that. They're using it and not, they want something different, but they're using the same app because there's no app really built for relationships for that generation. That's really who we built our app for, to transfer those people into a different experience when you're more serious about the relationship.
That's crazy. 40.
Millennials are turning 40. Oldest millennials are turning 40 in 2020. Yeah.
So s'mores would be something that Gen Zs can date, right? They're like 18 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. Would be
also interesting because 50% of our user base is actually Gen Z, not millennial.
Interesting. And do you think that has to do precisely with what you'd be talking about, in that Gen Zs? I'm not saying this isn't the millennial, you know, I'm a millennial. So the millennials and Gen Zs, the one difference is that Gen Zs are looking towards more serious, more looking to get to know the person more deeply than our generation, who grew up, you know, with Facebook swiping left and right, or Tinder swiping left and right.
Yeah. So my personal view on it is, I think millennial, and I'm also millennial, so I think millennials are a bit of a screwed up generation. Love you guys. But here's the thing with millennials. I'm one of them, so I can say this. We grew up at a time where we knew what life was like before an iPhone. Yep. So we went on with our day. We had the Nokia phone where we played Snake all day. Got the Motorola flip phone, and then we got the Sidekick, and then we were super cool with the Sidekick. And then what happened was, you know, we had Blackberries, and then the iPhone changed everything, because the iPhone made an instant connection to anything we wanted. We could buy tickets to an AMC movie instantly. We can order a taxi to our house instantly. We can book a flight instantly. We can literally order sex to our door like this. Mm. So I think that you take life for granted when everything is available on demand. But the problem with relationships is, a relationship is not made to order. You cannot order the perfect guy or girl, as nice as that sounds. You cannot order the perfect sexual experience to your house even. And so it's a false sense of reality that concept, that using your phone as a remote control for your life, would work for a dating app, even a sex app. But that's sort of how it's been used. And I think that it's also become very addictive. So how many people listening to this podcast have downloaded those apps and deleted them and downloaded them? Like, think about it, probably multiple times in a month. Mm. They have an addictive quality to them, but ultimately they teach us to treat relationships as if they're disposable. Gen Z doesn't know what life was like before an iPhone. So for them, it's like, whatever, I don't care. It is what it is. Mm. And I think that they never devalued relationships the way that the millennial generation has. And so that's why you see Gen Zers are much more, I think, inclined to be in a relationship than millennials were at the same age, which is why a product like S'more, you would think would appeal to an older demographic, but actually it's not. It's equally a millennial and a Gen Z demographic.
Do you think that Gen Zs are also more willing to date online than millennials?
I think both are, honestly. Yeah. I think both are.
Like, what do you think about long-term dating? What is it called? Long-term online dating. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, long-term online dating. I think eventually people do want to meet in the real world. Mm. I think, you know, you do have an added element of the fear factor with COVID, which is a challenge. But again, I don't think that, you know, even when you have a vaccine and the whole world gets it, which is probably over a year away at this point, I still think that we've just gone through this, right? So we don't know when COVID 2021 or what else is going to happen in the future. So I do think that we move forward in a very similar way, which is why I call this a new normal. Mm. And why I think it's not a bad thing for relationships that we take things a little slower. Let's not just jump into meeting a random person. Let's know who that person is before we commit to them.
Do you think that I'll tell you a funny story. So the way I came across S'more is I was reading an article on, I'm going to butcher this name, but Xiao Ois or something. It's a Chinese AI dating girlfriend that was created by Microsoft China. And I was reading this article about how this AI, this Xiao Ois, had around 660 million Chinese men dating her. And this AI had prevented suicides of men where they wanted to kill themselves, because like there was this one gentleman who was saying, oh, you know, I was about to jump off my balcony because, you know, I felt so ugly and women didn't like me and I was rejected from my society. But then Xiao Voice messaged me as I was about to jump and said, hey, I think you're beautiful. And then this gentleman just got off and then started messaging. And so anyways, it was just basically this very long article about it. I was like, wow, this is fascinating. So then I just went on and looked at like, what's the new dating app, you know, that the ones that I don't know about. And that's how I came across S'mores. So what I wanted to ask you is, as we're talking more about the future and dating being more future oriented, do you think that we're going to get to a point where we humans will start dating AI, like Her, the movie, right? That where the gentleman, I forget the actor's name, he's dating this AI. Yeah.
Yeah. I see a lot of movies. So I think I hope not. I think that there's enough people to talk to an actual human. I think again that we need to change our expectations a little bit. We need to change our behaviors a little bit. And I think that once we do that, we'll feel a lot better with ourselves. I think giving a conversation time, I think treating a person like a person when they're online and you don't know them, you don't know them. Right. And which is why I don't know, you know, if you realize this, but 75% of men begin a conversation by saying hi, hey, or what's up to a woman. And 75% of women, if that's the first message, do not respond.
Really?
They're wondering, why the hell are these girls women not responding to me? It's because they're not being thought, they don't care. They're spraying and praying that they're going to get a response. And so when you do that and you have very little effort as part of it, your outcome is going to be low, which is why everyone's outcome, most people on these dating apps are low. Mm. If you put in really strong effort, if you spend time on your profile, if you spend time sending someone a message and saying, hey, I thought your headshot was really cute. You also like Fiji. And I realized that, you know, we have the same taste in music. What are you up to this weekend? Be a little bit thoughtful in the conversations that you start, because those are more likely to end positively. I don't think we need to be in a world where we're chatting with AI for romance. Mm. Like AI should assist us in getting things done for sure. I'm like completely in agreement with that. You might even want to have AI to help you write to a partner online. Like if you can write your view, you know, basically talk to text. So you don't have to, if you want to write a large message, you don't have to sit there typing everything. People like reading as opposed to listening also, but we also want to make sure that there's many different stimuli happening in an app. So traditionally, apps have been very unidimensional. So it's just been text, which kind of like is boring after a while. It's text and photos and text and photos. And some apps don't have a lot of photos, so it's a lot of text. We need to make it more interesting, right? It's kind of a little bit boring, which is why most people only look at the photos. On an app like S'more, we require a user to have an audio cue on a profile. So
interesting. Okay.
You can either have an auto response to a question so people can hear your voice and listen to how you respond to a question even before they see you. You can also add your music to your profile so we can listen to the kind of music that you like first. We also are able to see your social media connections. We're also able to see galleries of photos, different things about you. And then it sort of reveals different sides of the person. And they can also upload videos into their profile. Anything visual on S'more unlocks over time, but the audio thing you can see and, well, I guess you can hear before you see the person. So it gives you more to work with. And I think that we don't need to be in a world where we're talking to these robots romantically, but we need to approach that. If we want an outcome, we need to give it more effort. And that's the behavioral change is needed.
Do you think the having that audio does, okay, so I'm thinking having that audio obviously would dramatically decrease the amount of fake profiles that are made because you need a sort of audio in there. The second one would be, I'm wondering if it also increases people's curiosity because they can hear this person that they're blurrily seeing.
Yeah. So if we take a step back and you're talking about, you know, catfishers essentially, you know, there's a lot of negativity with dating apps. It's kind of still feels like the wild, wild west. And we're in 2021. Why is that so? Why don't we do a better job of keeping bad actors out, right? If people are soliciting for sexual favors, if they're selling drugs, if they are selling you an erotic massage or whatever it may be, or if they're catfishing you, if they want to sell you something, the marketplace for dating apps is for relationships. It's not for selling sex. That's something else. It's not for selling drugs. That's something else. We have the technology today to remove 95% of all of those bad actors, and we're not doing that because in some cases it's bad for business. Some of those bad actors are also premium subscribers. So if you eliminate those people, you're also decreasing your revenue. And if you're a large dating app, that could have a tremendous impact. On a company like S'more, I don't really care about that. We're an app for relationships, period. So 100% of the users on S'more are verified. And when I say that, we cannot promise you a relationship and have you chatting with a catfisher. And so a lot of apps are saying, okay, well, now we have optional verified profiles. And the technology that we use, we have a video and we ask you to, you know, move your hand in a certain direction to make sure that you're a real person. But that only confirms that you're a real person. That doesn't confirm that you're not a catfisher, right? You can be a real person and still be a catfisher. On S'more, we go one step further. We actually do an AI facial recognition check. Your face, if your face doesn't match the photos in your uploaded photo to a degree that we set, you cannot create a profile, which means you cannot chat with a person, which means you cannot catfish a person, which means we're virtually catfish free.
That's incredible. One thing that you said that really piqued my interest is how you said you didn't really care about about losing these people who are catfishing. I think it's very important, you know, and that's something that's to maintain your ethical standards even as you grow. And that's something sounds like that's what you guys are doing, even with this whole catfish thing.
100%. And I think that if you don't stay true to your brand and if you don't create features to support your brand, then you'll lose. So for us, if we're saying we're about anti-superficial relationships, right? Then it is our duty to slow down the process. It's our duty to, in a way, strongly encourage you to not judge the person instantly. How do we do that? Well, then we have to remove photos, or we have to diminish the value of a photo, at least at first sight. And so we do that on S'more. We also need to build in mechanics that protect users so you're not dating a catfisher. Mm-hmm. We also, and I think the hardest part, and maybe some people will be mad at me for saying this, but on apps, men tend to not behave very well. Generally speaking, on a casual dating app, men aren't the greatest at behaving. And they're not really reprimanded, right? They're only reprimanded in extreme cases. Even if they send nudes, they're still usually on the app and fine. So what we need to do is we need to create a safer environment for everyone. And so on S'more, when you're in a conversation with someone, we ask both parties to rate that person. So we ask you, is this person being respectful? Yes or no, just respectful. And it's an up or down vote. And that vote lives on your profile and you get a rating score. And the rating score tells people when they come to your profile, even before they see your photo, are you worth my time? If you have a low score as a guy, no woman is going to want to chat with you and vice versa. And it's the same thing for the LGBTQ community as well, right? If you are an abusive person, that score will be reflective of the abuse and therefore you won't succeed on this app. You'll be frustrated and you'll leave because no one's chatting with you. So we're putting these mechanisms in place to change the average user behavior on a dating app, because we think that there's better outcomes if people are behaving more respectfully.
That's incredible. You're building in trust from the beginning.
Yes.
Do you have, for some of the listeners who are entrepreneurs, do you have advice for them for how they can, you started it from scratch. Some of them have teams, but as they're building, do you have advice for how they can maintain a cohesive, unified team? Or do you have advice for how somebody can go raise funds if they don't know anybody?
Yes. So I'll do the second question first. So how do you raise funds? I didn't know how, I really did not know what I was doing. I think if you ask people what's Adam's skill set? So I'm resourceful. I just get shit done. I may not have the skill set myself, but I will always get whatever I need to accomplish. And so that determination is, I think, part of what you need to have as an entrepreneur. We're on a great trajectory. Every day is grueling as hell. Every day I, have like mini panic attacks and heart attacks, and I internalize a lot of it because, I'm the one who's responsible if things don't go well. I have all this pressure on myself, and it's not as if our investors are even putting pressure on our company, but I do, because I know that we can be successful because I know that the world needs this, and I want to present them with the best product possible. And when I was raising money for my company, I got this piece of advice, and I can't remember who gave it to me. I think it was my former boss, actually. And he says, you need to write down on a piece of paper what makes you unique. What makes you special? And so I said, what do you mean what makes me unique? I don't even know where to be. How do you even answer that? And so what he meant by that was, well, write down you're Canadian, you're Jewish, you're gay, you went to Harvard, your family lives here, you studied X, Y, and Z, and your app, you're creating a dating app, a social network, what have you. Write down all of those characteristics that make you and your product unique. And then go find investors who invest in those areas. You will find alumni who want to only invest in people from their school. That's the alumni network. You might be very active in your church. There may be a VC tied to religious groups, actually, which would not surprise me. There's VCs that are tied to cities and countries that only want to invest in Canadians who live in America. Great, I fit into that. One of our investors only invests in companies that have a connection to Israel. Well, my father was born in Israel. They gave us a few $100,000. Now, not only because of that, but we qualified for that. And so that's what he means. You need to really, sit down and write what makes you unique, and then look for investors that invest in those uniquenesses. And I think that you'll be much more successful. And then again, I use LinkedIn as one of my main sources to try and find people that would invest in those areas. Mm. So that's the first question. What was your second question again?
The second question was, what advice do you have for a founder or CEO, entrepreneur, in building a cohesive team as they're expanding?
Yeah. So the team is the most critical part of this whole operation. Our product will always change. Our brand will stay the same. But if you don't have a team that is fully dedicated and has the same beliefs and has the same vested interests as you do, it just won't work out. And I really wanted to bring in people that I trusted. And I think bring in people that you know and that you've worked with or that were referred to you, like a really strong recommendation as your founding team. I think going out and just posting jobs to random people and trying to find the needle in the haystack, I think it was going to be really challenging and then opens you up for potentially not getting the right person. And I think if you have the wrong person in your founding team, it could just kill your company before you have a company. So I just thank God, honestly, every day. Our team is so amazing and we would not be anywhere without them. Our head of architecture, so the lead engineer of S'more, he has spent, I think, over 15 years as an app developer. He built the Luminary podcasting app and we hired him directly from Luminary.
That's awesome. Prior to
that, he was at Transfix, which competes with Uber on the logistics side. And prior to that, he was with the Guild Group building their app and their tech architecture. So he's known for scalable consumer and B2B products. So he has that specialization. Our head of operations comes from Deloitte, where she ran the medical and life sciences division of healthcare in the city of in India. And, you know, the operations of a dating app is very similar, right? You're just dealing with large amounts of data, and which is not just, it's a lot, but understanding how to make decisions based on large volumes of data and also personal data is her specialty. And so that's what we do at S'more. Our head of product comes from Advantage Media, which is an advertising ad tech company where she designed product and was also just a brand designer. Our other engineer is more of a, what do I call it? He's sort of like, he just breaks things. He's sort of this hacker developer that just knows how to break everything, which is great because you're building a better product if you know it's not breakable. And so he's on our team as well. We have advisors, three incredible advisors from the industry. One of them is the former CEO of the Meet Group. So he took that company public. We have one advisor who is the vice president of marketing at LVMH. So the largest luxury holding company in the world. And our third advisor runs data and security at YouTube. So when you think about creating the best cross-functional team, these guys are experts. And they all believe that this industry is broken. We can do better. People want more. And we should be able to create a product that delivers. And don't settle when you're hiring. If you don't feel like it's the right fit, do not make the hire, especially with your founding team.
That's a go with your gut sort of.
Yes.
Is there, besides, I know you mentioned earlier that there's you guys are announcing a new round of funding that's coming up sometime in January. And you're rolling out some new features. Can you give like a sneak peek of something that you guys are rolling out next year? I mean, tomorrow.
Yes, literally it's tomorrow. The whole app is new. So basically we took all of the product knowledge and data from a year of usage. And you know, people were telling us, we love the blurring part of your app, but we hate it. We want to see the blurring. But they like not seeing it, but they also, it's the friction that we knew that was going to be an issue. So what we're doing as we relaunch the product, actually tomorrow, Jan 1st, we'll be relaunching the product. So the main mechanic of our product is a scroll. So unlike some apps which are swiping, people are used to swiping. So we want it to make it second nature, but we have it on a carousel. So you actually cycle back to the first person, which means they're not disposable. You'll go back to them when you want to see them. So every day, this carousel of matches will change. So be able to see all those users. We also have 100% customizable profile. So every single profile that you see in a sequence will be a different color and a different visual setup. And what we know from the psychology of human beings is that when two things look visually different, that's when people pay attention. The problem with most dating apps, there's many, but the main problem in my view is when you look at these profiles, it's the first screen is just a headshot.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to learn anything about the person unless you think that they're the hottest, the most beautiful, what have you. on our profiles, the photo is blurred. You can't see it, but everything else is a visual difference. Mm-hmm. So the icons are all in different locations. The icons are all colorful. The icons are all animated. You click on one and everything, different things happen as you connect more on the app. You have audio cues, video cues, all these different things implemented into the app. We're also going to be launching cover photos on a profile. So if you're a paid user, you'll be able to show a preview of your face even before people unblur your photo. If you're a free user, you also get the cover photo, but you get to choose from one of 10,000 images that reflects who you are. So if you're a traveler, you can choose a picture from a country that you like. But it just gives each profile more visual difference, which then leads to much more discovery. So those are just a couple examples of things that we're launching tomorrow and throughout January that we are very excited about.
That sounds pretty awesome. So where can people, first of all, if you have social, where can people find you, Adam? And where can people find Smore? I mean, Smore, it's at Smore behind you.
Yes.
Smore date.
Yeah. So two quick things to know. So we're only an iOS app now. So if you go to the App Store and type in Smore date, you will find Smore. Click on it, download it, love it, enjoy it, and let us know what you think. We also have a very robust Instagram following. So again, we're very new to the Instagram game, but we started a celebrity dating show on Instagram during COVID. And our handle is at Smore date on Instagram. So every week for the last 6 months, I kid you not, I have interviewed a celebrity and we've talked about craziest dating stories. We've played hilarious dating games and we provide useful dating tips to people who are at home in quarantine. And today actually is our 59th episode that we've shot in the last 6 months, which is totally insane because we're not a content video company. We're an app. But the content's amazing, and we have celebrities from your favorite reality shows, models, actors, athletes. So definitely go check that out.
And the last question, is Smore available throughout the States, or is it still very specific to New York, Washington?
No. So Smore is downloadable across the country. We have 6 active cities. So we have 6 cities that we invest heavily to grow those audiences, but you can use the app anywhere in the U.S., and yeah, you should download it, use it, and enjoy 2021. It's much better dating than I think you've ever had if you're a dating app user.
That's awesome, Adam. Thank you so much for this. I appreciate your time, taking some time out on your Thursday to talk with me.
Thank you so much for having me, and Happy New Year to you and also to all of your listeners.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Thanks so much, Adam.